boys are back in town. The boys are back in town. Welcome back, all you Bills, Phils, Nannies, and Does, to the Mount Goatmore Cliff Dive Podcast. And thanks to our ladies holding down the fort last week. They put on a great performance. But, man, it's good for us to be back on the mic, giving it to you guys every single week. Who is the greatest of all time? What is the greatest of all time? What is greatness? You know, we're chasing it. It's me, Cam, LaRon. We're back at it. You guys, how are you doing this week?
Gotta say, it feels to me like greatness must be my voice communicating with this beautiful mic of mine.
I'll tell you, it feels great being on the mic. I've missed it. It was nice having the girls do it, and I was excited. I think that they did a great, great job.
They too. Really did. My God.
But man, I miss talking to you guys.
What's going on, everybody? I second everything that's been said. It's nice. We all three like to chat it up. So good to be back.
Good to be
back. All right,
back.
Cam. What are we talking about this week?
We are talking about voices. I did that thing I do, you know, where I make it relevant. Yeah, we're talking voices, and we're talking voices in movies. The greatest vocal performances in movie history. So this is kind of interesting. There were a lot of choices that had to be made with this. Did we go with animated movies? Did we go with roles where they were voicing like a robot or something? I don't know how you guys chose, but I had a process, and maybe we get past the list and I'll talk about my process for spoiler's sake, but I really like my list.
Yeah, you know, it lends itself to animation, obviously, because the voice, whether it's cartoons or claymation or, you know, like cut out pieces of paper, voice acting and those are most important. But there's a lot of examples through TV where people are voiceovering other actors. And so I've got a little bit of everything on my list. But I was focusing more on the vocal performance, you know, the sounds that they're making with their voice, instead of, you know, the actual looks and physical acting that either them or their cartoon claymation counterpart was doing.
I think we always try to challenge ourselves. We don't, you know, anytime we think of a topic, if it, you know, is going to be too easy, we always try to think of a way to, how can we make the list more interesting? And this one was difficult because it was easy for me to think about just voices, you know, maybe cinematic voices as a person. And then it's also easy for me to distinguish, like, you know, movie characters, but to pick apart, you know, characters and their voices, like, we loved that character for that voice. That was pretty challenging. I don't know about you guys.
Gotta say, one of the things that really made my picks resonate with me, I wanted these performances to be completely new voices. My favorite ones were when somebody created a voice and that voice really resonated with, you know, not just me, but with everyone, with the culture. And I really love a voice that becomes like the voice for a character.
Yeah.
And that was maybe one of the biggest things that separated the people that I picked.
So the majority of mine are mainly for their iconicness and the iconicness of the voice, not necessarily the actor. You know, Morgan Freeman doesn't make my list because I don't think that he has any iconic roles just for his voice. He has an iconic voice. And so these are roles where when you think of this character, you think of the voice playing this character, at least on my list.
Cool. Well, we did have some lists. As far as my criteria, these lists didn't really tackle how I would do it, but they were still pretty decent lists. I think both of them kind of were people voice acting for either a cartoon or, for instance, one of the voices was Douglas Rain as Hal in whatever that movie is called. God, I'm
gonna Space Odyssey.
Yeah, 2001. Right. Okay, I'm going to edit that out because I don't want to look like an idiot. But one of the voices was Douglas Rain in 2001 A Space Odyssey as Hal, which I believe is in both lists. And we'll start with Screen Rant's list. And it's called Robin Williams in Aladdin and 9 Other Iconic Voice Acting Performances in a Movie. What a mouthful, right? Number 10, they had Scarlett Johansson as Samantha in Her. And
I really liked this one. It almost made my list, but it did not make my list.
I didn't watch that movie, but I could imagine what that would be like.
It's sultry. But it's also really compassionate. She does a good job.
It's impressive, her doing... You know, the thing that almost put this on my list is that there's so many movies that you cannot see any romance between characters who are actually even physically being romantic with each other. You know, there's not connection. This isn't a woke list, so I won't go over that. But, you know, when there's no chemistry between romantic partners in movies, you can tell immediately. She doesn't even get physical at all with Joaquin Phoenix, who in his own right is a spectacular actor and did a great job in this movie. But they did such a great job being patient with the chemistry between these two characters that it is a really impressive performance. She's sultry without really trying to be sexy, you know, and it's, you know, it's comforting. And it's also, again, Scarlett Johansson.
It is the quality of her voice, though. Her voice is like that. But, you know, that's something in the arsenal. And part of this list is certain people have such great voices and they're able to utilize them in ways. When they're able to perfect their voice, that's when you really get magic. When they're able to make that voice of theirs, for whatever reason, whether it's really deep, really high, but they take it to other heights. With that, number 9 is Eddie Murphy playing Donkey in Shrek.
It's a great one. It did not make my list, but it just barely missed out. This is way more iconic than Scarlett Johansson's role.
I didn't really consider it. It's, you know, I love Donkey, but to me it's Eddie Murphy playing an Eddie Murphy role.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Exactly. It is iconic, though. I mean, there was a good 10-year gap in history where you would run into a person quoting Donkey every day on the street.
Number 8, Amy Poehler in Inside Out. Didn't really get this one.
Yeah, I didn't either. I saw the list that you're going over, and I didn't
really.
She's a good actor, or she's a good actress.
It's just Leslie Knope.
Yeah. Honestly, it's a better casting job than a voice acting job, right? They just kind of nailed the idea of happiness with Amy Poehler.
So a lot of the choices that I didn't make, that was how I felt. It was like, this is perfect casting, but the vocal performance is just a person being that person, which isn't maybe 100% honest because they are actors, and what seems like them just being them a lot of times is a carefully cultivated character, but in this case it was so close to just Leslie Knope. Don't see it. Number 7, Jeremy Irons as Scar.
This is a great one. I really thought about doing this one.
Me too. But I felt bad because I knew I wasn't doing Mufasa, and there's no way I would do Scar without Mufasa.
Yeah. And also, it's a little bit of the same thing we just talked about. It's a really good casting to cast Jeremy Irons. He's just a really, you know, he's got that sort of British voice that is charming, but, you know, a little bit dark. And so it's just classic TV movie villains to have a really good British voice to do a smooth, cunning villain.
Number 6 is Douglas Rain as Hal. Number 6 is Douglas Rain as Hal.
Yeah, this is close the pod bay doors. Again, this is iconic. Robot voices are a little bit like this is like the classic robot voice, really monotone and kind of emotionless. as compared to Scarlett Johansson's, which is a lot more emotionful. She's playing an AI too. But
I've got a better robot voice on my list.
All right. I like it.
I'm interested. Thank you. Foreshadowing. Number five. This is a good one that I didn't pick, but really, really great. Mercedes McCambridge as the demon in The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah. The yeah.
voice that possesses the girl.
Pazuzu?
Yes.
Yeah. Scary.
I wouldn't know because I don't watch those kind of movies.
That's a famously scary one.
Number four is Pat Welch as E.T.
This is a pretty good one. It's
iconic.
Yeah, it's definitely iconic. I think that, I don't know. I think Vin Diesel as Iron Giant was a better version of what E.T. is doing here, where it's very few words but they're very poignant.
That's what I was about to say. Does E.T. even really talk enough for it to count as like one of the greatest?
E.T. phone home is one of the biggest movie lines in history.
Yeah,
you ain't getting on my list off one line.
Good point.
Fair.
Number three is Robin Williams as the genie.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about this more.
Yeah, let's just save it for later. Number two is James Earl Jones as Darth Vader.
Yeah. Honestly, this one makes my list because it was either this or Mufasa. And I thought Mufasa was a better casting. But to me, this is a classic movie voice. And I'll get into it on my list.
Number one. James Gandolfini as Carol in Where the Wild Things Are. What a weird pick for number one.
Weird. Yeah. And I love Where the Wild Things Are, but I mean, iconic. If you played that over the speakers in a mall, how many people would know what that was from?
Right.
Right.
All right, so we have one more list, and I'm only going to read there are four of them in a row. No, five in the list that are from different movies from what I've already shown. It's IGN's Vocal Heroes, the 25 best voice-only movie performances, which is kind of a little closer to what we were looking for, I'd say. At number nine on this list is Ellen DeGeneres as Dory. It is just her voice, but I think she does a really good job of communicating the character and the loss of memory and just the kind of way she is.
I'll be really honest. I knew Dory before I knew Ellen DeGeneres, which seems weird because of how famous Ellen is, but not really watching her show growing up. When I saw the Ellen show, that's when I realized, oh, that's who plays Dory, not the other way around.
Number eight is...
Oh. I think that it gets into a little bit of a different category where maybe not as iconic, but just irreplaceable. And like, so so you all talked about like perfect casting, and it is great casting, but it's great casting because of her vocal performance.
Yeah. Yeah. It could have easily made my list. I like that pick a lot.
Right. What else is on there? Peter Bain as Thumper in Bambi.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a real good one.
And a pretty iconic freaking vocal performance, but not on my list. I don't think it's on either of yours either.
I didn't even think of it.
No.
Number seven, Tom Hanks and Tim Allen as Woody and Buzz.
Yeah, I mean, again, this to me is more of the casting, right? It's a great performance, but I think that's the casting.
It was close to making my list.
Yeah. Fun fact, Woody was almost played by Billy Crystal.
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah. Number six, Phil Harris as Baloo. That's a really good one.
Phil Harris is kind of Disney legend, right? He does this with Baloo. He does this with Thomas O'Malley. He's just that classic Disney smooth male voice.
It's like Patrick Warburton with Pixar.
Yeah.
And just cartoons today.
And a lot of these, I was reading through the list and it's like, oh yeah, shoot, I didn't even think about that one. They did a really good job. So I'm curious to see your all's list too, because I think it's kind of easy, even though a lot of these are iconic, some of the best performances, it's easy to forget, like, oh, yeah, wow, yeah, they did that perfectly.
Number three on this list, and it's the last one that didn't make the other one, but it made a lot of lists, was Kathleen Turner as Jessica Rabbit in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you want to talk about sultry. This is way, way more sultry than Scarlett Johansson's performance.
Mm-hmm. Almost by definition, that's kind of the point of the character. Mm-hmm. But if it is the point of the character, then the actress is doing as good a job as you can imagine.
Yeah, I love that pick. Again, maybe casting is better than the voice acting, but it's still fantastic job playing that character with just your voice.
For sure. So for our list, do you guys want to start with the one we have in common? So we actually talked earlier because we wanted to decide if we were going to do a goat above goats. And we made an interesting decision. We all have the same character, Genie from Aladdin, on our list, but we are not choosing him as the goat above goats. Cody advocated for it, but me and LaRon were against it. I can say for my reason, it's because though I love the performance, some of what we were talking about, and it managed to stay on my list for another reason, but for me, this is Robin Williams. It's just Robin Williams doing Robin Williams. But it's also doing Robin Williams as the performative Robin Williams, not as the person. Like, if you go to a stand-up show, seeing the Genie is like seeing Robin Williams doing stand-up, or like an evolution of the Vietnam movie, whatever, Good Morning Vietnam. But it is still mostly Robin Williams. But as much as any character that has been mentioned so far, they made this role specifically for Robin Williams. In fact, they even made a reel, or they made like a demonstration reel to show to Robin Williams of him doing stand-up, and animated it with the Genie to get him to take the role. So it wasn't like, and Robin Williams is a legend. I keep saying his name over and over, and this is a legendary role. But I had a little trepidation because of that, because it wasn't him having to create this new character. It was him doing his thing. It was just, but it's still so good. And it's not like he was, well, I guess maybe he was. He gets those Bill Murray stories, you know, that people tell. Yeah. But I guess he did do this in his regular life, but this is what anybody loves about the guy. But that's why I didn't want it as the goat above goats, because I don't consider it for why I have the other things on my list, which we haven't said yet. I don't consider it like on the same level of creating a character as those.
Totally. Yeah. And I get it. You know, it's kind of that same argument that we're using, is that the casting was better than, you know, the actual vocal performance. But to me, this is the ultimate example of that. Right. And you guys liked Will Smith as Genie more than I did in the recent Aladdin. I truly can't replace, you can't replace Robin Williams' Aladdin. You have to do something different because of how unique of a person and of a talent he is. And, you know, I think one of the big things, not only just his overall performance of the Genie, but a friend like me is one of the most impressive musical numbers I've ever heard, because of he's not just singing, he's going in flashes into different characters and completely different vocal ranges, and it's just one of the more impossible things I've seen somebody just pull off flawlessly. And you can watch him do it in live time when you watch these recordings. It's not like they're cutting it together. He's running through the whole song, doing all these different voices and stuff, going from a French guy to a British guy to a Southern guy to the Genie and then back again. It's really impressive stuff, just that song. But, you know, the energy level, the different funny characters that he can do. I truly have never been able to imagine that character not being Robin Williams.
And his irreplaceableness is kind of, for me, what puts him up there on my list. But when I think about, you know, this conversation of when we make decisions on who gets to be above GOAT status. And in my book, it's those that there is no debate. There, like, this one is clear, head and above, shoulders, all the rest. And I just think that there's so many marvelous performances, vocal performances, that this one is great and all time great. Obviously, it's on my list, but doesn't reach that level. So,
and one thing for me, Robin Williams is great, and he originated the role, but Dan Castellaneta was great in the animated series, and he was great in Return of Jafar, and he's been great in the Kingdom Hearts series and in all video games, which, you know, takes a little bit of something away from, to me at least, the idea that it's untouchable. And we're different in that I loved Will Smith in the new Aladdin movie. I don't think LaRon liked it that much, but I loved
it. I didn't like it the first time, but I think I was, every song that came on, I hadn't watched Aladdin in a long time. So it just, like, took me back, and it was different. And, you know, I don't even like when musicians do live versions of their songs. Like, you know, just give me the version that I'm used to. But when I went back the second time, I was a lot more, you know, I was way more impressed with Will Smith's performance.
But he's still on all three of our lists, and it's a great, great performance, and probably maybe the best, or one of the best vocal performances in Disney history. There might be another one on one of these lists.
And as far as having another person be able to play it, it's one of those interesting things that such dynamic people have people do impressions of them, and you start getting these impressions of impressions. Robin Williams is one. Off the top of my head, Jim Carrey is another, where people will do Jim Carrey's impressions of things. Mm-hmm. And so Robin Williams is kind of needed to make that role happen.
Right. And no, the role, it just doesn't exist. Even the Will Smith version owes everything to the Robin Williams version. Their hip hop genie idea still originates with Robin Williams' stand up.
Yeah, it's just so enigmatic that it's just, I mean, to me, it's singular in its importance to Disney, and in very much a way that James Earl Jones is important as Mufasa. There's just some of these moments in Disney movies where you're like, man, so much of our culture hinges on this one person's performance, and Robin Williams as the genie feels like that to me.
Well, we all agree that he's great, and this was an argument over not whether he was on our list, but whether he was the GOAT of GOATs. So yeah. Me and Cody, we both talked a lot. LaRon, who's your first non-Robin Williams pick?
So I'll go. I split my list. I think that there are so many great animated vocal performances, and there's so many great, you know, just regular movies. And so I kind of split it half and half. And so the other animated movie of mine is another Eddie Murphy role, but Mushu in Mulan. Mm-hmm. When I think about this movie, it was one of my favorites back in the day. And I couldn't imagine somebody playing that role better. A little dragon who is, you know, going off to save this family line, but he's not as big and bad as, you know, the person he was supposed to commandeer. So I just think that he was irreplaceable. And for me, with the animation, the irreplaceable was the key. Like, I tried to watch Mulan 2 when, like, as an adult, and it's like, I just cut it off after you hear Mushu. It's like, you can tell he's trying to do an Eddie Murphy impression, but it's like, no, I don't even want to watch the movie if he's not playing that role. And so that's why I put him up on my list.
It's funny, because that's another one, just like Robin Williams. Eddie Murphy is another one of those that people do impressions of his impression, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's, man, the new live action Mulan, I actually liked it in a kind of cheesy action film way, but it suffered hard not having a Mushu.
I didn't watch it. I was completely, when they said no Mushu, I said,
yeah.
And you want me to watch this? Do you know that I've seen Mulan with Mushu on it, and you want to make one without it? Like,
I think they made a good decision, though, if they couldn't get Eddie Murphy to do it. And I think it would have been hard to pull off. I watched it. I liked it.
I would have liked a non-speaking Mushu talisman, at least some sort of thing that connects the movies, you know. The Phoenix thing was lame to me, but
I'm not watching a movie where there's a dragon and then they remake it without a dragon. Yeah. It's like I hate the 101 Dalmatians remakes because the dogs don't talk.
Yeah.
Why would you make a movie with talking dogs and then make it live action without talking dogs? You're making it worse.
I don't think they could have pulled it off. I really don't think they could have pulled off a talking Mushu in the live action.
Oh, I don't think so either. But I wanted at least an Easter egg. You know, movies, ever since MCU dropped, movies love their Easter eggs.
That's true.
You could just have a Mushu talisman. You know, they could Mushu. They're talking about the Phoenix Guardian. They could have at least just talked about Mushu's the Guardian and not have him say anything. You know, the Phoenix doesn't say anything. But to get back to the point, I do think that this is way, way more iconic and important a role than Donkey. And Donkey might actually now be the more popular Eddie Murphy role between the two of them. But like you said, Laron, it doesn't really work. Mushu doesn't really work without Eddie Murphy. And so a lot of this personality of the movie hinges on this idea of having this, you know, funny, out of his depth dragon, which Eddie Murphy is a perfect cast for that. He does that great.
Great choice.
So for my next pick, I'm going to go with a different type of animation, claymation. And mine is from the movie Coraline. And it is Terry Hatcher as mother and then as the other mother. And to me, this performance is on the scale of all the ones that I have listed, the most subtle, but one of the most impressive ones. For people who haven't seen the movie, this character is essentially replaces the child's real mother with a monster that kind of wants to eat her. The way that she ramps up the intensity of how creepy this thing gets throughout the whole movie is really impressive. And she's using a lot of these techniques like timing where her words are off. And it's just really fascinating to watch it because you have her being the real mother as the movie starts and everything feels so natural. And maybe they're not really getting along, but the conversation feels real and it feels natural. And then she moves into this replacement mother and she's being way more nice, but you can tell something's off. It's almost too nice and it feels fake. And as the movie goes on, this fake mother turns more and more into a monster. And as she turns more into a monster, Terry Hatcher does way creepier voice and way does stuff with her voice that's really, really subtly unnerving, like speaking under her breath and making it more growly and making it more echoey, which is the sound technician. But it all plays so perfectly into this character as it builds the intensity of Coraline is really in trouble and her old mother, maybe she's not getting along with her, is at least real and at least loves her. And this other thing is so unreal. And it's just, to me, a really impressive performance by Terry Hatcher.
I like to pick. When you think about what that includes, the subtleties, the build, which I guess fits in the other scary movie voices, like that ability to kind of subtly change and build over time, like that is impressive. And it like takes you through an emotional journey almost. Mm-hmm.
And it's about how subtle it is, you know, with the Pazuzu voice, right? That voice is trying to be scary and it is scary, but it, you know, a demon voice, right? You have an idea of that and it's kind of over the top and extreme. This is just her little subtle differences, like pausing at weird moments and like making the S's a little bit too long where they're more snake-like and, you know, shortening the way that she says words and all of it builds, and it's how it builds into this really creepy creature, which during the movie you see the creature turning more and more into a monster the whole time. It's just, when I rewatched it preparing for this list, I paid close attention to the voice, and I mean the things that she's doing with her voice is really interesting. It's a really cool watch to just watch the voice acting that she's doing.
I've never seen it, but the way you describe it sounds great.
It's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
Cool. It's scary though, Cam.
Oh, not for me then. Not for me. Unless I wear some extra pants, of course. All right, so we all have, or you guys picked your second animation picks. I have one more pick that is in the world of animation. Kind of alluded to it earlier, but you didn't catch it. It is Betty Lou Gerson as Cruella de Vil in the original 101 Dalmatians. That's one of those roles that you don't realize she is creating a voice that represents so much, a voice of villainy, a voice of extreme psychopathic privilege, a voice of British aristocracy, and she's not even British. It's the other way around. You have British actresses and actors doing perfect American accents, but in 101 Dalmatians, Betty Lou Gerson does a great British accent and creates this character that's scary in a really human way that isn't typical for Disney movies or a lot of movies in fantasy and children movies in general. And it's so imaginable. Glenn Close does a good job in the live action movie, but I don't think she surpasses Betty Lou Gerson's version at all. And just when she peaks to these moments of uncontrolled violence and hysteria, the character just becomes precisely what it was meant to convey, precisely what, I forget his name, but the male character, not the dog, but the human, sings about in that song. And it's she's one of the more underrated Disney villains, and this is also one of the more underrated Disney villain performances. It's not as grandiose as a Scar, and it's not as just witch-like as, say, an Ursula, but it's so effective. And it is a voice for that is iconic in its own right.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot. It's also the villain in Disney that is the least physically intimidating, right? Mm-hmm. You know, as compared to Scar, who might be just a normal lion, is still a lion. Or any of the Huns in Mulan are still warmongering people, you know. This is just a businesswoman who's just ruthlessly cold. And so I like that pick a lot because a lot of that is portrayed through her voice. And like you said, through the moments of sudden anger and sudden lashing out, right?
Right. And, you know, I would challenge you to go and look up Betty Lou Gerson, some of her other performances around the same time on YouTube. And she is masterful at creating different voices for even just small bit characters. And she created a really lasting one in 101 Dalmatians. So I wanted to give her the props for that. I think it's a great, great vocal performance that people forget about, but don't forget about at the same time. And that really works for me.
When I think of a good villain, so a good villain is either someone that they're so, you know, they do what they do so well that you almost kind of root for them. Like you don't want them to win, but you kind of do. Or on the opposite turn, you hate them. And that was what makes them a good villain. And Cruella de Vil, that was like when I'd hated her. And part of it was what she did with her voice. And I think it's a great pick because it made her a great villain.
I mean, Ursula is like a sea devil, and I hate Cruella de Vil way more than I hate Ursula.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a great pick. What do you got, Laurent?
Okay, so I'm up with my first, and with these last two, you know, I went with one more serious and one more, you know, comical, because with voices, they take us through different, you know, emotional journeys. And I think with the regular movies, with the live person, it was a little bit more of a personal decision for me. And so my first one is Smokey from Friday. I mean, when
that's great.
When you think about, you know, just what he did, and it's a, you know, for a lot of people, that Friday movie is a staple movie of like them growing up. And part of the reason is because Smokey. I mean, the other two, you know, Next Friday and Friday After Next, like it was fine with who is it? Mike Epps. That comes. I mean, you know, he does it well, but it's not Smokey. Like, you know,
right.
And what Chris, you know, I wanted to put Chris Tucker on there. I wanted to put a lot of people on there. And I considered between, you know, Rush Hour, you know, his role on Rush Hour, and but his role as Smokey on Friday was just perfect. You know, he's so goofy, but you know, he's cool too. And so like he easily makes you laugh just to listen. It's so quotable, you know, the whole movie. I can quote about the whole movie. So that's my first pick.
Mike Epps told me what up at a Denver Nuggets game.
No way.
I was going to say, one of the things that really sets a great vocal performance apart is how easy you can hear it in your ear without watching the movie. And I can easily hear Smokey's voice. You know, you can feel, you feel it precisely like Craig does about Smokey. Hilarious, but annoying and stupid, but also your friend that you want to keep around forever. And you wish they hadn't waited so long to make another Friday because John Witherspoon passed away. But great, great choice. Smokey, Chris Tucker. And you're right, Rush Hour would have also been great, but I think if I had to make the pick, it would be Friday. Friday is the voice you can really hear.
And I do think that the voice connects to the character of Smokey more than the character of Rush Hour, right? The character of Rush Hour is kind of just Chris Tucker action figure, right? But Smokey, that voice is Smokey, and I think it's funny because everybody growing up has somebody like that in their life, that voice almost speaks of that person. Everybody's known a Smokey while growing up, and it's the same person over and over again. Everybody's person is exactly the same, that kind of annoying, trying to say stuff without saying stuff.
Just an annoying, high-spirited, but just none of us can say it. LaRon, you got to say it.
I don't know exactly what you're trying to say. I keep wanting to like throw in some Smokey quotes on there, but you know, we are a family-friendly podcast. I think that's why we're having a little bit of trouble.
I think that everybody gets it. We're trying to keep it family-friendly while describing this, but I like the choice a bunch.
And just an example of like, you know, you can put yourself, and he does a great job of putting, you know, you in the imagination of what that character will be going through. Like when he's handing the money to the guy and he's counting, he's like 10, 20, 40, and then he's out of money, but then he flips it over 60, 80, 100.
Yeah, that's a good
pick. What a big worm. I mean, so many quotable things from Smokey. I had to throw them on there.
I'm going to smack the dust out that.
I know you don't. I know this.
All right. So for my next pick, I'm going to go with one that I literally just thought of right before we started the podcast, and I had to rearrange my list for. And it's Gollum from The Lord of the Rings.
Ooh.
Andy Serkis. What a voice. This is a voice that now everybody knows and everybody tries to emulate. And you want to talk about somebody just making up a voice. He made that up on the spot. There's no idea of this from the books. You know, they kind of just gave him full rein and was like, what do you think that this thing sounds like? And Peter Jackson was involved in it, but I mean, Andy Serkis is creating that voice, creating the motions of that character, and it's not even really human, right? It's such an inhuman voice that's become classic. You know, lines like "My Precious" have now in history have been solidified to this movie and specifically to this idea of this character. And this character is, you know, again, based off of a book characterization with not a lot of just precise description, right? It's a lot more flowery language that's being used to describe him. And this character, I don't think, works at all without this kind of creepy, half-mad voice that gets so many lines. And it's not just the voice, it's kind of the cadence of the talking. He changes it up very much like Yoda in Star Wars. So that was my pick, Andy Serkis's Gollum.
Great, great, great pick. God, I love this movie. At least I love the original trilogy. Not a fan of The Hobbits at all. But he just knocks it out of the park. He creates that character. You forget Andy Serkis exists. You forget that this is not a creature that's not real. And the thing that is most triumphant about the performance is that you really believe those two. You believe in Smeagol and you believe in Gollum when he's having that argument with himself over and over. That conflict. You can feel the conflict in his voice. It's perfection.
Did anybody else pick this on their list?
No, I feel like you said, I feel bad. I feel dumb.
This was the one, Cam, I told you about that I thought I picked a one above all that nobody thought of. And I didn't even think of it until literally we turned on the podcast and I was like, oh my gosh, how did I miss this?
If LaRon, I don't know how LaRon feels about it, but I would have comfortably put it above all. That's how great I think it is.
Interesting. I think you pointed out something that, in the sense that you kind of forget about that person, like it's just that character. I think that's big when you talk about these kind of roles.
I mean, Andy Serkis sounds nothing like that, not even close. And what's most impressive to me in your life, you've never really even heard a person that sounds like that, right? It's such an alien interpretation of human voice. And I just, to me, it's so impressive that he came up with that. And it's pretty impressive that Peter Jackson just let him do it, right? Because it's kind of a wild choice. At some parts, you can't even understand what he's saying, but that's kind of the point. The thing is crazy. It's a hobbit or whatever that's lost its mind. And so the voice fits perfectly to me.
I like it.
Cool, cool. So my next one, you for sure wouldn't expect, Cody. It was a movie that it took me a while to see and that I had a kind of immature outlook on at first because I was against this American character, this highly American character being played by somebody that was not American, but they do such Doctor a phenomenal... God, no. Oh, my God.
That's kind of what I thought you were doing, too. Wow.
Oh, you don't know me if you think that. No, I know you know me, but no. So it's a character. It's based on a real person. But the thing that makes it so amazing is that they take this character or that they take this person and interpret them in a way that is kind of historically more accurate, but feels this person has existed. We know this person. They're kind of in our everyday life. They appear. And we have this idea of how they sounded and how they presented themselves. And this actor, through research and through being maybe the greatest actor of all time, reinterpreted their voice in such a way that changed the way I hear the voice in my head. It's Daniel Day-Lewis as Abraham Lincoln in 2012's Lincoln.
Yeah.
And that the choice to voice him not in that deep baritone way, but more high-pitched and almost shrill and contemplative. It's kind of a masterpiece. Like, not kind of, it is a masterpiece of an acting job and of a choice. And there's just so much of, if you read historical accounts of Lincoln, you understand that he was a guy who liked action much more than he did words. But the way he speaks in this film almost presents that idea. You can imagine a man who doesn't really like to talk. And when he does speak, it's with great thought and reservation and understanding of the power of his words. Anybody that's the president is probably going to have quite a bit of narcissism, and there's even a narcissism in that voice. But I didn't want to see that movie for the longest time, and actually watching it, I was like, what the heck? What is with this voice? And reading into it, I was like, this is something else. There's probably never been a performance that changed my perception of a real person, a person that there is no recorded information about, or not recorded, but there's no, you know, there aren't any vocal recordings of Lincoln. And so with biopics, you watch something like Capote with Philip Seymour Hoffman, and he gets really close to what Truman Capote sounded like. But with this, we get to see the idea of what Lincoln sounded like reinterpreted in a more accurate fashion. And I think it's one of the great vocal performances. It's more than just vocal, but that might be the greatest triumph of Daniel Day-Lewis's Abraham Lincoln.
It's interesting interpreting a lot like Andy Serkis did with Gollum's voice, but it's interesting interpreting something that hasn't really been heard. The closest thing that we have to being able to hear Lincoln recorded is an episode of I've Got a Secret, which was an old TV show. And on this TV show was the last person that ever heard Abraham Lincoln's what was the big speech? Emancipation Proclamation. That's the closest thing we have to a recording of Abraham Lincoln, is a recording of somebody who heard it secondhand. Mm-hmm. So it is a really interesting thing. And, you know, I don't think that I admire it as much as you do, but I will say I admire the courage it takes to not do a booming voice Lincoln, right? And you touched on that. Because that's the easy way to go anytime you're playing a figure of authority, is having that big booming voice. But Daniel Day-Lewis, through all his research, and we certainly know him as one of the best, if not the best, method actor that we've ever had, his research went into a very, very specific choice in that voice, which we've heard Daniel Day-Lewis be booming, right?
Right.
Bill the Butcher is a booming presence. And this Lincoln that he played was not that, at least in his voice.
You know, I didn't even think about doing voices of, like, you know, because there's tons of films that are, you know, set in back in the day when, of mm-hmm. course, we don't know what they sounded like. But I never even thought about that in the challenge that it is to take on, like, okay, who is this person? You know, what did they represent? And what is the voice that's going to make, you know, that's going to match that? What are the fluctuations and when I speak and, you know, when I misspeak? Or yes, that's really interesting. I like the pick a lot.
It's a really interesting pick.
And one of the things, you know, there are people whose job as historians, and I guess related to acting as well, but it's to keep track of what those accents were like. And that's one of what makes Daniel Day-Lewis, a lot of his performances so impressive, is his mastery of accent. A lot of actors, great actors and actresses, don't have anywhere near the mastery of a guy like him or a Gary Oldman, but mm-hmm. it's another one of the triumphs of Lincoln. But you're right. You know, when it works well, when you get a perfect period piece like that, it's like taking a dip in the past and seeing it for what it really might have been, as opposed to just for entertainment's sake. The entertainment is great, but it's a piece of history, or it's almost a piece of education, and it's a piece of art, and that's why it's my pick.
Your pick.
I like it. Okay, so my last one, we up?
Yeah. Yep.
So this last one, I went with kind of the impact that it had, and imagining the kind of impact it would have on me if I put myself in that scenario. And it's Denzel Washington's performance on Remember the Titans. Mm. And, you know, as someone who, you know, playing football in high school was such a big part of my life, you know, imagining having a coach like Coach Boone, to be able to, you know, he's one of the best at those monologues where he, you know, he can sit down and kind of give a speech or, you know, motivate you, or, and especially like with the trying times, right? So they're dealing with all of the racial issues, and he's having to motivate his team to be a team and to be united. And the, you know, the serious, the stories that he tells, like, you know, on the sideline, or when he sends a kid in and he tells a story about, you know, all of his brothers and he's the youngest and he's got to, like, I could just imagine, like, man, if we were in a tight situation in a game and he pulled me over to the side and like gave me that speech, like I'd go out and, you know, do whatever. So yeah, I just, the impact, I think, and what he represents in that for such a trying time, I had to put it on the list.
Another real classic voice, you know, Denzel Washington as a personality and as a voice is kind of there with the likes of, you know, Morgan Freeman and stuff, where he just him as a person has so much personality and persona that, you know, Denzel Washington can kind of speak over any part and make it more intense than the average actor could. So I like this pick a lot. A speech from Denzel Washington or any monologue is pretty good, let alone one that has racial tension in the background, you know.
Oh no, but he feels to me, I've seen the movie just in high school when teachers didn't want to do anything, they put on Remember the Titans. So I've seen it dozens of times maybe, and he is the voice of a coach. When I think of coaches in my head, that's the voice I think of. And it's great performance. He has a lot of ethos. It's easy to just think of him as like the commanding guy, but he also plays a father in that movie. And he plays someone that doesn't just have to lead these boys, but has to care for them. So great choice.
Well, and it's interesting. Compare that to another legendary black actor's voice, Samuel L. Jackson, who also played a
coach
role, but you don't really think of Samuel L. Jackson as a coach or having a coach's voice as compared to Denzel Washington.
Early honorable mention, Samuel Jackson as Jules Winfield in Pulp Fiction is one of my honorable mentions.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I had thought about Coach Carter as well, but like you said, Denzel, like you can... Like I said, I could imagine him being like, man, that could have been a coach and what that would have done, you know, for me. And when you think about a coach, like, and especially a football coach, you think of a guy who, you know, can yell or, you know, that screams all the time. And I think that he depicts it really well, a guy who is very selective in when he is quiet and when he is like, you know, speaks firmly but softly. And then when he gets loud and the way that he builds, like in the movie, if you go back and watch it.
Well, to me, the more important characteristic is the determination. He's unwavering in that movie, as he pretty much is in almost every movie. He's unwavering in some sort, which is not an easy quality to pull off, especially vocally. And kind of the courage behind his voice, and again, the unwavering from the path of righteousness.
Cool.
So for my last pick, I am going to go with Darth Vader, James Earl Jones, and the voice that kind of set the tone to Star Wars being, in my opinion, a cultural phenomenon. Some background to this character, James Earl Jones, as many people probably know, did not suit up and was not walking around for the Darth Vader suit.
What?
Yeah. This was a British bodybuilder.
David Prowse,
standing at a solid 6'7", almost a half foot taller than James Earl Jones. But Prowse, with all the imposing, you know, physical features, did not have the voice that we so connect with James Earl Jones now. This voice kind of sets the tone to villains moving forward from Star Wars as well, where villains kind of need big, boisterous, but smooth voices. And it's just the classic lines that come from Darth Vader kind of have to be said in that deep baritone voice, that real intimidating voice. And you can't really do that without the likes of James Earl Jones. On top of, I wanted to add in, and this isn't, I don't know if this is necessarily an accolade for James Earl Jones, but it's certainly a part of the persona of this character, is the voice acting of the breathing through the mask, which has become iconic and classic for even more than Darth Vader. You know, people, anytime that they want to intimidate anybody, it's a classic thing to cup your hands to your mouth and breathe through your mask. It even goes so far to being an homage that that's being paid to that with Bane's mask in The Dark Knight and him breathing through the mask like that. Another great imposing character. So to me, the effect of this voice kind of impacts, I think, the majority of Star Wars, where it takes a very kind of silly space opera adventure and gives it a lot of gravitas, because you have this villain figure that is bigger than life because his voice is kind of bigger than life. You know, imagine Luke, I am your father, coming from any voice, even Denzel Washington, you know, imagine it coming from any other voice and it doesn't impact as much as it originally did. You know, him shouting commands, him threatening, it's even so far that when they have appearances of Darth Vader in the new Rogue One movie, they went so far out of the way to get lines in for James Earl Jones because they want to keep that voice connected to this universe that they've built. So that's my pick.
Great pick. Almost on my list. Probably should have been. Part of it for me is that I was trying to reward, and it doesn't really work for this, but I was trying to reward actors for really putting in work and creating a voice. Mm-hmm. And this is mostly just James Earl Jones doing his booming authoritarian voice, which he does perfectly. And like I mentioned earlier, the actor has to have the ability to do that. Everybody has a natural vocal range, and the deepness of his voice is what it isn't. There's a lot of people with deep voices, but everybody doesn't have the theatrical training of James Earl Jones right. to do what he does. But the second part of what makes the voice so great is the effects, is yeah. the breathing. And I had a hard time. I guess I probably could have given credit for that. Really, the kicker then why I didn't have it on my list is because I knew you were going to. And I don't like to do that, but we already had one alike. And it's easier for me to take Vader off of this particular. If we were just doing the greatest Hollywood voices or movie voices, then this would be on it. But we're doing the greatest vocal performances. And well, that's.
Again, the big separating factor to me was whether or not it's actually James Earl Jones doing the breathing, which I don't think it is. That adds to the performance of the character, mm-hmm. in my opinion, right? And so that's what separates it from the likes of Mufasa, where Mufasa is strictly James Earl Jones being James Earl Jones and giving gravitas to a big figure with a big voice. There's a lot more intricate stuff, I think, going on with Darth Vader that makes him probably the greatest movie villain of all time, right? At least the most iconic. So I think that there's a lot of, you know, the intricacies of the way that he's saying these lines and the sounds that they're using that, I mean, makes it very villainous on the same level as Hannibal Lecter, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of big voices, but it takes a lot to really, I mean, make, he's created the greatest villain of all time. So to me, it can't really be off my list.
Well, the thing for me with Darth Vader is it's not just the command and the regality of the voice. It's especially in, I actually have it written down here, but in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, it's that vulnerability that mm-hmm. and that emotional vulnerability, which still does not at all diminish who everything else about him in those final two movies, that and that kind of wavering confidence next to Obi-Wan. I love all of that. He's a character. He's not just a villain, not just this figurehead. He's a real character. And it's one of the more impressive character creations ever. He could easily be on my list. I only really didn't have him because you have him on there. And yeah, because the other person I want to put on my list, I love to talk about them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things too, where I think speaking through a mask and making it believable, but also able to be understood, is another quality that's impressive of this, because he always sounds like he's speaking through a mask, but you can take a great actor in Tom Hardy and have him do the same type of interpretation of a villain speaking through a mask, and it becomes silly at times. It becomes unrealistic at times because you can't really understand what they're saying. And so,
of course,
yeah. So with all those things put together, I think those things add to the performance. And maybe it's not all James Earl Jones' ability doing it, but the character comes out very specifically as a great movie villain. And I think the vocal performance has a whole lot to do with that.
I think it's a clear choice for sure. You know, when I do these lists, you know, part of my criteria is impact, you know, that it had on me in some way. And I didn't watch Star Wars, any Star Wars movies, until like 4 years ago. I know that's kind of crazy, but obviously great and great choice for everything that you said. But that's why I was able to keep, you know, some of these iconic performances off my list, because I based it on impact on me.
It's understandable.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's time for my last choice, I believe. Great choice, Cody. My last choice is the last performance of a great actor who really became known as a great actor during this movie. It is Heath Ledger as the Joker in The Dark Knight. And it's a voice that became the new voice of the Joker, which is saying a lot, because Mark Hamill's Joker voice is so phenomenal, but this reinterpreted the Joker in a way that was so creepy, so insidious, and for some reason, so relatable to so many people. We're still seeing the effects of that. You don't get Joaquin Phoenix's amazing Joker performance without Heath Ledger's new interpretation. And it's just so creepy. Everything I've mentioned about what made voices make this list for me is you can see it in Heath Ledger's Joker. You can imagine the voice in your head. You can hear it easily. It has these iconic lines. It is a creation of Heath Ledger that still fits with the character. It's a new creation. And if there's a fourth one, it's that I have no, like, this is not what Heath Ledger sounded like at all. Yeah. In fact, I looked at interviews, but I hardly remember what they sound like. And, you know, I've seen A Knight's Tale. I've seen Brokeback Mountain. I know he sounds completely different, but the Joker is so definitive that it became, you know, a cultural touchstone for what a comic book villain could be like on every level. And, you know, it's most of these performances are great for more than just the voice. But the voice is for sure one of the reasons why this one is so great. That first time, and from the trailer, for the first time we saw the trailer, kind of the history of comic book movies in the last 20 years, there's this idea that they'll cast somebody and the fans will be like, he's going to suck. And this is the first one where it was really, really subverted, where the fans got their just desserts and had to eat it. And yeah. It, from the first time we heard, I'm going to put a smile. I don't want to do the impression, because there was a, you know, a couple of years where it was so cringy. Oh, my impression's great. I just don't want to spoil the Phil's, Bill's, Nannies, and Doe's, but it's phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, I love this pick. I can't believe I didn't. This was how Gollum was to you. I can't believe I didn't think of this one. and you hit the nail on the head. Heath Ledger is an Australian actor, but he was mostly known for his British accent. Like you said, he was in A Knight's Tale with a very classic British accent, and then 10 Things I Hate About You with a more regular British accent. But this was not just a creepy voice. It was a voice that you couldn't even like really pin down where it was from. You know, as an American, all the accents that were going around it were kind of New York-y type accents. You know, Gary Oldman with a really, really classic New York accent as the commissioner. Or maybe a Chicago accent. Somewhere up in the north.
Gotham.
Yeah. But
you can imagine it as a Gotham accent. Like, that's how good it is. Yeah.
But with Heath Ledger, that's part of the mystery of it. It was just a weird voice, you know. I suppose it's Midwestern because that's the, like, all-around American accent. But it was such a 180 from everything that we knew about him. I mean, he's unrecognizable as the Joker, you know. That the voice plays a huge part in that. Because makeup can only hide so much. You know, going back to when LaRon said Doctor Strange, Doctor Strange, even for a good actor that Cumberbuns is, he did a pretty bad American accent, I thought, in that one, and never really shook the idea that this is Benedict Cumbersome. And I think that the idea that Heath Ledger can mask everything about him, including his voice, is really impressive as the Joker. And like you said, I mean, for edgelords all over, this is probably the most iconic character that's ever existed.
Yeah.
We go to Comic-Con still today and people dress up like this Joker.
They don't just dress up like this Joker. They try to become this Joker.
Yeah.
They're, besides the Deadpools, the people who get the most in character.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an impressive one. And, you know, ever since... And it was so different as the Joker, too, is the other thing.
Right.
We have classic Jokers, like you said, Mark Hamill... But also, Jack Nicholson. But, you know, Jack Nicholson's voice is kind of just Jack Nicholson being manic, right?
Mm-hmm.
This was completely different than anything we've heard. So I wish I would have thought of this one. This was a really great pick.
That's how I feel with Gollum, bro.
Yeah.
I think we're going to do a recap of all of our picks now, and then we could do the honorable mentions.
Yeah, LaRon, why don't you lead us off with a recap of all your picks and kind of why you picked them?
Yeah, so my first pick was the Genie. We all talked about him extensively enough, just how iconic and irreplaceable the performance was. Second was Eddie Murphy, and not necessarily any order. I'm just saying the order that I said them. But Eddie Murphy's Mushu in Mulan. And again, that irreplaceable I'm not watching Mulan 2 because it doesn't have Eddie Murphy in it. The third one being Smokey from Friday. And just the way that he made his character, like, you really relate and feel. And like how Cody said, that everybody could imagine a kind of friend like Smokey. And then last, Denzel and Remember the Titans. And just because of how well he did at embodying what a coach would look like, and not only what a coach would look like, but in that time, what that would mean for a team. So, yep, those are my picks.
Yeah, my picks were the Genie from Aladdin, Robin Williams, Cody Word of the Day, quintessential Robin Williams, and then James Earl Jones as Darth Vader, the voice that kind of sets Star Wars and the villain of Darth Vader above all other franchises. Terry Hatcher with her really unique performance where she goes from a normal person into a bedlam demon over the course of a whole movie in Coraline. and then Andy Serkis as his invention of Gollum and the way that Gollum speaks.
All right, my picks. Robin Williams as the genie for being a pure distillation of what makes Robin Williams great in one character. Daniel Day-Lewis for being a more historically accurate and brilliant version of Lincoln. Betty Lou Gerson as Cruella de Vil for being the early Disney representation of privilege and greed. And lastly, Heath Ledger as the Joker for taking a decades old character, reinterpreting them and making them creepy and completely losing the actor. The actor literally loses himself in that character. And by the way, I'm Cam.
For some honorable mentions, I wanted to dive into a couple that haven't been mentioned. Davy Jones off of Pirates of the Caribbean, nice. Bill Nye's interpretation of that. He was basically just told, use whatever voice. And there's a really cool behind the scenes take where he's talking about why he chose such a Scottish accent and stuff. A really cool voice. Also, Marvin the Paranoid Android by classic voice Alan Rickman in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I'm not able to read that book series without hearing his voice as Marvin. And then Vin Diesel's Groot. Nice. For Guardians of the Galaxy.
Nice. So my honorable mentions, shout out to all the greats that are obvious that didn't make my list, but two I wanted to give special attention to was Yzma from Emperor's New Groove. I think Eartha Kitt did an amazing job the whole movie. And then especially when she turned into a cat at the end and acknowledged, like, is that my voice? And then just executed it so brilliantly. And then I really, really wanted to put this guy on the list. And I tricked you guys when I said I had a robot on my list. He was an honorable mention, but James Spader in the Avengers 2, as the robot,
Ultron?
As Ultron, yeah, Age of Ultron. If we were making a TV show, he would have made my list, from the Blacklist. But I love James Spader and his voice and like the way that he'll tell stories. I think he did an amazing job being a computer coming to life in Age of Ultron and then telling these creepy stories in a robotic way. I thought he did a great job.
All right. I already mentioned one of mine, Samuel is Jules Winfield. I love the way that he mixes being a preacher almost with, or a righteous preacher with a gangster and then has like a reawakening. It's like an actual preacher of the word, kind of. Mike Judge as Beavis and Butthead in Beavis and Butthead Do America. Yeah. And not only that, but he also plays the kind of proto Hank Hill voice character in that. Very, very talented voice actor. You guys are laughing, but to me, being able to do all those voices and them being so distinctive shows how talented Mike Judge is. And I know they originated as a cartoon, but I wanted to give him some credit. And this was the closest to making my list. Marlon Brando as Vito Corleone the voice. Everything about the character is so great, but the voice is completely different from Marlon Brando's. And it's the voice that when you hear of Godfathers and the Mafia is the one that comes to mind. And that is it.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to visit just voice actors, right? So that you can give Judge a little more props, because there's a lot of great voice actors out there. I think that doing research on this, I know that's a list that I want to do in the future. But to all you Bills, Phils, Nannies, and Does out there, thank you for tuning in, week out. We've appreciated all the support. You know, we're really, really glad that you guys had such positive feedback on the girls episode and how great that they did. Keep tuning into us every week and feel free to reach out on Instagram, Facebook, our website. We've enjoyed doing this and building this podcast for you guys. And so I'm just really glad and humbled that you guys appreciate us so much.
Yeah, be easy and I'll see you next time.
Stay great and lead on.